Well, good morning. It's Jeff Wine, host of The Car Show here on Sun Sounds Radio. Folks, once again, we have an action-packed show for you today. Catch you up on the latest and greatest of the world of the automobile. Well, I got some great stories today about a 1966 police car in New Jersey that's getting rebuilt. An Olds 442 a guy's been chasing since high school. We've got Formula One news. They're down in Brazil, rainy Brazil, this weekend. We've got NASCAR news regarding Homestead last weekend. We have some results from Jeff's search for a Grand Sport Corvette and his journey on that. We'll also talk about our gas prices. And, of course, it wouldn't be The Car Show without a little car talk. You know what to do. Fasten those seatbelts nice and tight. It's going to be a fast ride on The Car Show. Well, our first article today is from the pages of Old Car Weekly. And the title of this article is From Hurst to Olds 442, A High School Dream Results in a 442 Find. Well, it all started in the winter of 1980 on a boring Saturday afternoon. I was accompanied by my mom to the grocery store in nearby city of Fort Atkinson, Wisconsin. Luckily enough, there was the Oldsmobile, Buick, and Cadillac dealer next door. So I went to look at cars on the showroom floor. There was a brand new, leftover 1979 Hurst Olds in white and gold. I instantly fell in love with that car. I really wanted to own it. But I was only 15. I was a sophomore in high school with a paper route. Well, the car certainly was way out of my budget, but it left an impression on me, and someday I knew I wanted one. Well, about 2 weeks later, I was leaving school for the day, and there it was, the 1979 Hurst Olds sitting in our high school parking lot. I learned some lucky kid who was a junior at our high school got it as a present. On February of 1980, about the same time I was dreaming about the 79 Hurst Olds 442, or excuse me, Hurst Olds, the 1980 Olds 442 that I now own was rolling down the assembly line in Lansing, Michigan. From there, it made its way to Loki Oldsmobile in Clearwater, Florida, where Mr. Max Hopewell was waiting to take delivery. Now, Max was an Oldsmobile salesman for more than 30 years and ordered the car as his own personal demo. And when he heard it would be the last of the 350-powered Cutlasses, well, he used the car as his own personal demonstrator and then bought it outright when it was taken out of demonstration service. He said he was planning on keeping the car forever, but of course Max's life and his wife eventually wanted a different car. So Max sold the 1980 442 in the late 90s with about 9,000 miles on the odometer. Now, the new downsized Oldsmobile Cutlass was introduced in 1978, and General Motors started its new life in midsize for the Monte Carlo, the Malibu, the Pontiac Grand Prix, the Buick Regal, and the Oldsmobile Cutlass. The Hurst Olds had beefed up version of the Cutlass had been out of production since the end of 75. The 79 Hurst Olds made a brief return for 1 year and then vanished again until the 1983 model year. However, the like-natured 442 version of the Olds Cutlass soldiered through the 70s, such as the 442 option would be offered in the downsized 78 and 79 models. Now, the 1980 442 is similar to the Hurst Olds. Both were based off the Cutlass Calais chassis with a white and gold options. Both had a four-barrel carburetor, 350 engine. Fortunately, the Hurst Olds had the his and Hurst shifter was not carried over on the 1980 442. A total of just 886 442s were built in 1980. And if my information is correct, they were not certified to sell in California. In my years of tracking all these cars, I found that the majority of them were actually sold in Canada. Well, in the fall of 2003, while searching for the 79 Hurst Olds, like the one I remembered in high school, I came across Max's original 1980 442 at a car corral in Fall Jefferson, Wisconsin, a car show and swap. When I saw the car, and the body was in pretty good shape, an engine had a knock, so I checked the VIN number and found out it was a legit 1980 442, and had been looking for the 79, but I'd never dreamed I'd find something even rarer, a 1980 442. I just had to own it. Now, in the glove box was a new acquisition of my new acquisition was a copy of the window sticker and a build sheet and a warranty booklet that had the original owner's name on it. Well, all that documentation led me to Max, who I shortly wrote after I bought the car. And after communicating with him, I learned about the first 20 years of the car's history. Now, Max said he sold the car in the late 90s. You could eat off the engine. It was so clean, he said. He lost track of the car until I contacted him shortly after I purchased the car in 2003. During that brief period from when Max sold the car to when I bought it, the Olds 442 had had a hard life. The front header panel had been replaced, probably following a minor accident. An incorrect header panel from a 1980 Cutlass Supreme was used, the waterfall type grill. The damage was minor. There was no real structural damage to the metal or the frame. Well, the car's biggest problem was the low-end engine knock. I bought the car at the Fall Jefferson in 2003. The gentleman I bought it from had bought it off of eBay and had it shipped from Florida to Wisconsin. When it arrived, the person who sold it to him neglected to tell him it had a lower-end engine knock. So he decided to sell it as is, and that's when I bought it. So the first thing I did was pull the engine and have it rebuilt over the winter. I wanted the engine rebuilt to the specs of the 1970 Olds W31. Now, Paul at Weaver Auto Parts in Madison, Wisconsin, did all the work. He bored over 30,000, installed 10-to-1 pistons, larger valves in the heads. I wanted the original quadrajet carburetor rejetted to handle a bigger cam, along with some other work. I also installed true dual exhaust all the way back, but had the tailpipes exit in the factory locations. I also had the turbo hydromatic 350 automatic transmission rebuilt by my friend, Mark Walker, who is a tech at Thorstad Chevrolet. He also put a shift kit in the transmission along with a higher stall converter. Now it comes to the body. Since the car spent most of its life in Florida, the paint was pretty thin from all the sun. At first, I was going to repaint the top of the body, but at the body shop, they talked me into repainting the entire car. The car was stripped down to bare metal. We found some metal, very solid except for some rust around the inner deck lid. I found a new deck lid at a salvage yard in western Nebraska. I also did the task of finding the original Calais header panel, which I finally found in a salvage yard in all places, Florida. The grills, the wheel opening moldings, and other chrome pieces currently on the car are NOS units that I found. I also had the wheels refurbished, the bumpers re-chromed, and sourced a stripe kit from Stencils and Stripes. Well, when I originally contacted Max, he was gracious enough to send me pictures of the 1980 442. At the conclusion of the letter he had written, along with the accompanying photos, he said, "Have fun with my our car and take care of it." You know what, Max? Thanks. And I have done that, certainly. Well, that's a great story about finding that car that you've been looking for, and boy, do I know that story well. Teased the fact that I have been looking for a C7 Corvette. That's the last body style that is the front engine rear drive versus the mid-engine rear drive. These cars were built from 2014 through 2019. There are four basic body styles: Stingray, Z51, Grand Sport, and then the big daddy, the Z06. Well, I've been looking for the Grand Sport, which is the one that has the body very similar to the Z06, but has the smaller engine, only producing 460 horsepower versus 650 in the Z06. Well, I have had several local cars that I have found. Looking around, I decided after driving several of them that I definitely wanted the manual transmission in this car, which is much rarer because about 80% of the cars that were built were with automatic transmission and paddle shifters. Not as many people want a 7-speed manual. Well, after looking at several here in Metro Phoenix and bringing them to the shop to have them do a pre-purchase inspection, which is critical when you're buying a used car, having a third party look at the vehicle and give you all the goods and bads that they find. Well, there were too many bads on the local cars. Then I found a car up in Las Vegas. Well, my wife and I had a trip planned to Las Vegas for the last couple months, going up on a little midweek journey and just kind of hanging out at the Venetian and enjoying some time. Well, a torch red, so let's start, Tobin Motors in Las Vegas, which is the Ferrari, Maserati, Aston Martin, and Rolls-Royce dealership, found this car, and it is a stunner. According to their ad, which now says sold, because that car is sitting in my garage here in Scottsdale, it says Grand Sport. Check out this stunning, highly optioned, torch red, gray interior Corvette Grand Sport we just picked up. If you're looking for a solid, well-optioned, ultra-low miles Corvette, look no further. We have your next ride. Just went through a complete safety inspection on this vehicle. It needs nothing but a new place to call home. That's a clean Carfax, no accidents, complete safety inspection and service, well-equipped, ultra-low miles. $75,815 is the original manufacturer's suggested price. Excellent color combination. It has the GSLT2 preferred equipment group. It has painted red calipers, black wheels, a hood insert, exposed carbon, a carbon flash badge package, and the exterior vent colors are comboed in. Folks, this car is stunningly beautiful, and I am so excited to call it my own. This car is sitting in my garage right now, and I want to thank the people at Tobin. And Ken Logan, my salesperson, was just outstanding, made the deal so seamless. And I also want to thank the folks over at Finley Chevrolet. They made time out of their schedule to work my car in and do a pre-purchase inspection at the Chevy dealership. Not that the guys that are doing the Ferraris and the Aston Martins and the Rolls Royces don't know cars, but they don't know Corvettes. They were very accommodating and worked it in. Actually stopped by on my way out of town to give them a little thank you card. So the hats off to the guys, Carlos and Matt, over at Finley Chevrolet. So folks, I will have more stories to tell about this. 5,500 miles on this beautiful 2017 Grand Sport Corvette. And it is everything that I was hoping it would be and more. And I feel like a kid who got Christmas, his birthday, and everything he always wanted, all wrapped up in one thing. All right, back from the pages of Old Car Weekly, the headline reads, New Jersey students restoring a 1966 Dodge cop car as a part of the centennial. Well, as the Union Beach Police Department prepares to celebrate its 100th anniversary in 2025, the Brookdale Community College Automotive Department students have embarked on a unique project, restoring a 1966 Chrysler Newport police cruiser that once patrolled the local streets. The 1966 Chrysler Newport was donated to the Union Beach Police Department several years ago, but has fallen into a significant disrepair over time, missing key components such as, the engine and the transmission. Well, under the guidance of Brookdale's automotive instructor, students are now working hard to bring the car back to life. We've got a lot of work ahead of us, but the students are excited and motivated. This project is more about than restoring a car. It's teaching students the value of craftsmanship, teamwork, and respecting the past. Now, the Chrysler Newport was a powerhouse of its time, equipped with a 440 cubic inch V8 engine capable of producing 365 horsepower. In the 60s, police cruisers like this were commonly used in high-speed highway patrol, especially in states like California, North Dakota, South Dakota, Utah, and Nevada. And according to Chief Woodrow, reflecting on this era, these cars were built for speed and power, essential tools of law enforcement at the time. The team plans to have the car fully restored and operational by Christmas, just in time for the 100th anniversary celebration. The restored 1966 Chrysler will stand as a reminder of the evolution of policing and the strong bond between the community, the college, and the police department. It's an incredible project, and when the car rolls out on the street again, it'll be a proud moment for all of us. Again, NASCAR was down in Florida, and the headline reads, Reddick wins tooth and nail fight at Homestead to advance to the Cup Series Championship Final Four. Well, Tyler Reddick is headed to the Championship Four to compete for NASCAR's championship after a third-to-first last-lap drive to win last Sunday's race at Miami Homestead Speedway. Reddick wrapped the bottom around turns in 1 and 2 and completed a pass on boss Denny Hamlin for second position on the corner exit of the white flag, and the 23-11 race driver then drove around the outside of leader Ryan Blaney to make a winning pass through turns 3 and 4 on the last lap. The victory capped off a day where Reddick started on the pole and won the first stage and led a race-high 97 laps. It's the first time that Reddick will be able to compete in the Cup Series Final Four Championship. Well, we were backed into a corner, man, and we had no other choice, Reddick said. I know we were on a tire deficit, and here at Homestead, that could be a death sentence, but I don't care. We did what it took to win the race, and now we're fighting for a championship. Blaney finished in second. Hamlin finished in third, who won the second stage. Hamlin was also leading with two laps to go before Blaney took the top spot on turns 3 and 4, coming to the last lap. I couldn't believe it, Reddick said on his winning pass on Blaney. I knew I just needed to get even with him on the right side. I didn't care what he did. He raced me clean, and I appreciate that. I'm really, really excited that we're going to have a shot at this championship. The run to the finish was 7 laps after the caution for Kyle Larson's spin. Larson was racing Blaney for the lead when he spun, trying to squeeze in the middle of Blaney and Austin Dillon on turn 3. Reddick stayed on the track and inherited the lead after having run alongside on the previous fuel run. Blaney led Hamlin and Chase Elliott off pit road. Billy Scott made that last call, and it was a little scary because I thought we were going to run out of gas, according to 2311 co-owner Michael Jordan said of the pit strategy. We needed a caution at the end, but anything can happen, as you can see. Denny was up there, but that little kid drove his butt off, and I am so proud of him. He just let it go and went for it, and I'm glad he did because we needed it. Well, on the final restart, Hamlin took the lead by going to the top of turns 1 and 2. He drove around Reddick and Elliott, who restarted on the front row. Blaney and Reddick settled into second and third place before the frantic run to the finish. It's an obvious disappointment, Blaney said. I had a great shot to win, and I didn't do a very good last lap. Man, I thought I had it on turn 3. I ran it in there hard, and Reddick just blitzed it in there and made it stick, which is pretty impressive. I hate the way we lost this race. I don't think we gave it away. We got the lead back after losing on the restart. It just didn't play out right for us. It definitely stinks. I appreciate everybody at the 12 team for bringing me a really fast race car. We had a shot to go to Phoenix. We still have one more chance in Martinsville, and we have to look forward to that. Well, Christopher Bell finished in fourth. Elliott was fifth, completed out the top 5. William Byron in sixth. Alec Bowman in seventh. A.J. Allmendinger in eighth. Carson Hocevar in ninth. And rounding out the top 10 was Ryan Priest. Well, the final race before they get to Phoenix next weekend, and Martin Truex Jr. sits on the pole for today's running of the Martinsville Speedway Xfinity 500. Chase Elliott will start in second. William Byron in third. Chase Briscoe in fourth. Ty Gibbs in fifth position. Harrison Burton, a great start for him, in sixth. Alex Bowman in seventh. Ryan Preece in eighth. Kyle Larson in ninth. And rounding out the top 10 was Austin Dillon. Big news is the fact that Denny Hamlin, who is still trying to get into the final four, crashed in practice and will start dead last. So I'll have those results for you next weekend. Well, last weekend, Formula One was in Mexico City, and the headline reads, Mexico City Grand Prix win extremely emotional for departing Carlos Sainz. Well, Carlos Sainz admits he found his victory in Mexico City last weekend an extremely emotional affair as he won in front of his family in the closing stages of his career at Ferrari. Ferrari's strong form from the Austin Grand Prix continued as he followed his second place the week before with a pole position and a victory in Mexico after only briefly losing out to Max Verstappen on the start, then having to repass the Red Bull with an impressive late move into turn 1. Sainz pulled clear to beat Lando Norris to victory, and he said it was a very special result. I felt like this weekend was going to be a very good opportunity to win the race, Carlos said. I had a very good feeling coming into the weekend and obviously very determined to win. I knew coming into it we would have our chance. I've been focused and I've been on it all weekend. On top of that, I knew my family was coming, all my friends, my girlfriend, a lot of people were here to support me. And maybe it was destiny. It was something for me this weekend. Maybe it could be my last win for a Ferrari in front of all of them with all the support I had from them. A great podium, a great place like Mexico City. I've been driving well and I made it stick, and you can't imagine how happy and proud I am. I was extremely emotional. I did shed a tear during the Spanish anthem. For sure, it was one of the best moments of my career. My mom, who had never been present for a race win with me, the fact that she was coming here for this weekend, I really wanted to win a race in front of her. On top of that, the way the whole weekend planned out, it was just perfect. And what a move. Losing on the start and then having to fight back with Max made everything a little more tricky and probably made it taste even better because I had to work hard for it. To do this weekend in front of all of them was incredible. Now, the move on Max Verstappen saw Carlos Sainz outbreak the Red Bull from a long way back into the first corner. He said he had been ready for a fierce battle despite starting on the pole. I didn't get a very good start, but at the same time, I think Max tends to start well on low grip tracks where the Red Bull cars tends to do better. Well, Max was going alongside me into turn one. I braked as late as I could. He braked as late as me. There was no space into turn two. From there, I didn't lose my head. I knew I had the opportunity, and I got the lead back. And I would do this with Max. You have to be determined, because if not, he will not let you pass. So Carlos Sainz wins the Mexico Grand Prix and could be his last win for a Ferrari. And he did it in front of his mom. Top five rundown. Of course, we know Carlos won the race for Ferrari. Lando Norris finished in second for McLaren. Charles Leclerc finished in third for Ferrari. Lewis Hamilton in fourth for Mercedes-Benz. And rounding out the top five was Russell and a Mercedes-Benz as well. And I'll have those results for you this weekend. I'm actually watching the show live right now. They're in a rain delay down in Brazil. They've had a lot of crashes, and Lando Norris is on the pole for today's running of the Brazilian Grand Prix. At Old Car Weekly, this is called The Scoop, Hobby News and Views, Christie's to buy out Gooding & Company. Well, the British auction house Christie's has entered into an agreement to acquire the California-based Gooding Company, one of the most prominent auction companies in the collector car world. This acquisition will mean the return to the collector car business for Christie's, which previously conducted high-profile sales before leaving the market in 2007. Well, founded in 2003, the husband and wife team of David Gooding and Don Aris, the Gooding & Company specialize in high-end blue-chip cars and hosts some of the antique car hobbies, sales in Monterey, California, Amelia Island, Florida, and London and other locales. David Gooding previously worked for Christie's for more than a decade. This acquisition marks a significant milestone for Christie's, establishing itself in a position in the rapidly expanding collector car market, further solidifies the leadership in the broader luxury sector. Christie's and Gooding & Company are an ideal match, sharing values of specialists, expertise, integrity, and exceptional client service of the sale of beautiful objects. This combination will now provide Gooding & Company with an enhanced global platform to support its future growth and brand development. Gooding & Company remains committed to providing uninterrupted customer service of the highest level to its devoted clients, continuing with the existing calendar of prestige events, auctions, and more. At the closing of the transaction, Gooding & Company will be known as Gooding Christie's, and the deal is expected to become official at the end of 2024. According to the Christie's and Gooding existing calendar, events will continue as planned with sales in Pebble Beach, Amelia Island, London, and online. The buyout comes late in a challenging year for many auction houses, with collector car sales down nearly 25% across the board. In unusual automotive news, the headline reads, Lamborghini wants $376 for swim shorts. That's way too much. A Lamborghini towel? Well, it's only $190. It's not uncommon for automakers to have side hustles, especially when it comes to apparel. And why not? Selling branded items to loyal customers goes beyond free advertising. People are paying to promote the brand. There's just one issue with this new deal between Lamborghini and the high-end company Orla Brown. Nearly everything is expensive, devoid of Lambo logos. Lamborghini just announced a partnership which includes a line of swim trousers, shorts, and t-shirts, and a nifty towel. The towel has a large Lamborghini branding bold on the towel. It's $190, and it's the least expensive item. The swim shorts, well, they start at $376, and that gets you either black trunks that fade to blue or red trunks with black hexagons. If you prefer solid colors, black, tan are available, but get ready for some sticker shock. They're only $518, but at least you'll get the bold Lamborghini branding on your bottom. Wow. $500 for swim shorts? I think I'll pass. Well, time to talk gas prices with our friends over at AAA. Right now, the average gas price in the United States is $3.10 a gallon. Arizona, $3.22. New Mexico, $2.90. Colorado, $3.09. Utah, $3.28. Nevada, $3.78. And our friends over in California, well, how about this, folks? $4.54. In Texas, average gas price $2.60 a gallon. All right, let's see what's going on with our local gas prices here in Arizona. Well, in the Phoenix area right now, the least expensive gas is in Eloy at the TA Travel Center, $2.59 a gallon. The fast trip in Casa Grande is at $2.63. The 76 station on 6705 West Bell Road, $2.66 a gallon. And then you can find gas under $2.70 all over Casa Grande if you happen to be on the south part of the valley. Walk across the world right now looking at what gas prices are right now. The least expensive gas in the world is in Iran at 10 cents a gallon, Libya at 11, Venezuela at 13 cents, Russia $2.29 a gallon, Ecuador $2.56. If you're looking at Vietnam, $3.19 a gallon, coming down to China, $4.30 a gallon, Mexico, $4.75, Costa Rica, $5.15, and for the most expensive gas in the world, we're going to go down to Hong Kong for $12.50 a gallon. Well, it's time for a little car talk. Dear Car Talk, I need your advice. I have two cars, a 2017 Toyota Camry Hybrid with 9,200 miles and a 2020 Toyota Sienna van with 1,900 miles. My husband can no longer drive. I'm 78 and will probably put no more than 5,000 miles on a car each year. I do prefer the Camry. What should I do? Keep the Camry? Sell the van? Sell them both and get a new Camry? And that's from D. Well, D, there's an argument for keeping the Camry and selling the van. There's also an argument for selling both and getting a brand new Camry. And here's why you might want to keep the old 2017. First, you like it. You're comfortable in driving it, which counts a lot. You know where the controls are. You know how everything works. And it's pretty up to date in terms of safety systems. Automatic emergency braking. It's got less than 10,000 miles on it. You're 78. You plan on driving 5,000 miles a year, which means by the time you're 95D, you'll only have 95,000 miles on the car. And these Camrys, when well-maintained, can easily go to 150 to 200,000 miles, if not more. Now, there is an argument for selling both and getting a new Camry. Now, it's easier to learn a new car at age 78 than it is at 88. And for whatever reason, you do need to learn this. It becomes harder the older you get to master new tech and touch controls on these new cars. So the argument for getting the new Camry is now that you'll have a car that is 8 years newer and will be completely trouble-free as long as you need the car. It'll have the updated safety features, and if you're able to get comfortable with it, you know, you'll have this car for a long time. My suggestion, go drive the new Camry, see how it feels, how it operates. If you like it, and it's easy behind the wheel, and you don't feel overwhelmed by the controls, then sell both cars and buy the new one. But either way, the current Camry or a new Camry, I think you'll be set for life, D. So don't stress. Let your comfort behind the wheels guide you in this situation. And I think that's great advice. That older Camry, there's nothing wrong with that 2017 hybrid. But a new car, if she likes it, could work as well. Well, though, folks, that's all the time we have for the car show today. My name is Jeff Wine. We'll meet you back again on the radio next Sunday. And you're listening to Sun Sounds Radio of Arizona.